This is the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast brought to you by Art Wiederman, CPA with Ide Bailey. Whether it's taxes and investing or planning wisely, Art is the expert to make your dental practice profitable. At Ide Bailey, what inspires you inspires us. We provide a suite of accounting and advisory services dedicated to the total care of your practice. Visit our website to access our tools and resources tailored for dentists, idebailey.com/dentist. That's idebailey.com/dentist. This podcast is distributed with the understanding that Art Wiederman, CPA, and Ide Bailey, LLP are not rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Listeners should consult with their business advisors before acting on any of the information or opinions shared. If you have questions and or feedback, make sure to email Art over at awiederman@idebailey.com. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. You can also give Art a call at 657-279-3243. Without further delay, here's your host, Dental CPA Art Wiederman.
And hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast with Art Wiederman, CPA. I'm your host, Art Wiederman. I am a dental division director at the CPA firm of Ide Bailey. Ide Bailey is a national Western United States CPA firm, and we have 52 offices, and I am a dental division director. We work with about 1,000 dentists in our company. 200 of them are with my partners in crime, Don Watson and Henry Assatorian in Tustin, California. And since this is the Art of Dental Finance and Management, we're going to talk about finance and management today. One of my buddies is Matthew Nelson, who is a practice management analyst at the California Dental Association. Matt's been a dental consultant. He gets, we were talking before we started recording, probably a couple hundred calls a month. You know, what's going on in dentistry? How can I fix this problem or that problem? And Matt and I are going to talk about goal setting today and KPIs and what you need to be looking at. And doctors, if you hear me say the word KPIs and you start cringing and your temperature goes up and you start having cold sweats, please continue to listen to this podcast, because in a lot of cases, the only way that you're going to increase your revenues and your profit and your practice is to start looking at numbers and getting a feel of what's going on. The numbers tell a story. So we'll get to Matt, who's a, you know, I mean, he and I have talked about this for many, many times on podcast, off podcast. We'll get to Matt in a moment. I want to thank my wonderful partner, Decisions in Dentistry Magazine, Lorraine Kent and her team. They have 140 wonderful CE classes for a very, very reasonable price. Go to decisionsindentistry.com. We are going to be publishing this podcast right at the end of September of 2025, which means that October 15th, if you haven't filed your personal tax return, you need to get that done, for 2024. And then we at Ide Bailey jump into year-end tax planning season. And if you're not getting a phone call from your CPA saying, hey, Dr. Smith or Dr. Nelson, in this case, since we have Matt on the call, we need to talk about where you're at. And we have this new big, beautiful bill. And by the way, doctors, if any of you are in study clubs or have local dental societies or groups, I have a ready-to-go 40-slide webinar that I can do on the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Give me a call, 657-279-3243, or email me at A Wiederman, that's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N, at idebailey.com. If you need that, or if you need a dental-specific CPA who understands every bit of your business, and you're not getting really good information or answers from your CPA. I also want you to put November 13th, I believe is the date, on your calendar. We're going to be doing the fourth of our Business of Dentistry webinar series. It's going to be year-end tax planning. Don Watson of my firm and I, we just came out with a podcast on the new tax law. So take a look if you haven't become a subscriber to the podcast. that came out middle of August. And go ahead and take a look at that. We talk about all the aspects of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Again, this is being published at the end of September. One of the things you need to know, doctors, is if you didn't know this, most all of the tax benefits of purchasing a hybrid or electric car, which were up to $7,500 in some instances, are going to go away after September 30th. Unfortunately, that's the way that's going to work, as is going to be, we believe, the solar energy credit for putting solar on your house, and that, I believe, is at the end of the year. So you need to check with someone and see what's going on in that realm. And like I say, if you're looking for a dental CPA, Art Wiederman is your guy to call. A Wiederman, A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at idbailey.com, or call me at 657-279-3243.
Be sure to check out our new Ide Bailey podcast, Ebb and Flow, a business podcast providing inspired insight on issues and trends the middle market faces. Hear unique business stories, get answers to frequently asked and unasked questions, and understand business topics that matter to you. Available now on your favorite podcast platform.
All right, let's get to my good friend, Matthew Nelson. Matt is a practice management analyst at the California Dental Association. He is the guy at CDA, and folks, we have, you know, there's 27,000 members of the California Dental Association. And if you're not in California, you have your own state dental societies, pretty much all of them, I believe. You really need to make use of your state and local dental societies. They have so many resources that I didn't know about until I really engaged with them a couple of years ago. And, Matt is as good of a consultant and knows as much about dentistry as anybody I've talked to. So now that I've complimented you, Matt, you have to come through for me. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks, Art. And first and foremost, happy birthday.
Oh, thank you very much.
So if you're listening to this in September, I hope you get a whole bunch of happy belated birthday text messages.
That would be nice. I turned 66 on August the 14th. I didn't feel any different. I remember on my 40th birthday, I was telling my friends, we went out on and took a little Duffy boat trip around the harbor on 2 days ago. And I was telling them that when I was 40, when I got out of bed that day, I felt a little tweak in my back, and maybe that told me I was turning 40, but I'm in pretty good shape. So thank you for the birthday wishes. That's very kind of you. So, Matt, tell me a little bit about your background. You were an office manager, consultant. Tell us a little bit about your background so these folks know your breadth of knowledge.
Yeah. After college, I was a manager for a couple of really big retailers, and I really got to learn a lot about profit and loss statements and, you know, what it takes to run a good business. And then became an office manager for a pretty large dental practice. It was just over $3 million annually when I took over. And when I left, it was just over $6 million annually. It was pretty big office, but learned a lot about digging in and trying to peel back the layers of the onion. Found a passion for key performance indicators or KPIs, as we talked about. After that, I went into private consulting for about a year, and then a spot opened up here at CDA, and was fortunate enough to get in here to help our members out.
How long you been with CDA?
Oh gosh, just over 4 years now.
Well, you and I are going to geek out on numbers. Don't shut off the podcast, people. Don't shut it off. Okay, it's not going to be that bad. It's not going to be boring. We're going to make it exciting. I might even try and tell a joke during this. Who knows? We'll see. All right. Well, let's start with goals. And, you know, goal setting is so important, whether you're the CEO of General Motors or you're the CEO of your, you know, million or $2 million dental practice. So why do people miss their goals, and how do we fix the problem?
Yeah, that's the $1 million question.
Well, you're the $1 million guy, man.
You know, I find that a lot of the times the biggest issue is that there's not a goal set, and it's not a strategic goal, or it's not a thought out goal, or maybe it's just like I have this big lofty goal over here. And it's really, you know, not taking the time to take that goal, break it down into bite-sized chunks. Like, all right, if I want to achieve, you know, $2 million a year in collections, okay, what is that monthly? What is that weekly? What is that daily? And then does your team know? And are you communicating it? Are you talking about it at huddles? Are you talking about during your team meetings? And, you know, if it's a goal, the whole team should know what it is. So they should be driving towards that goal and they should know where they're at, you know, every day. And I feel like, you know, a lot of times there's not a tracking system in place or not following up on it daily.
Right. And people, they don't. It's like, you know, well, okay, so what did we produce last month? Oh, well, we didn't meet goal. Oh, well, we need to do better, right? I mean, we don't really get into all of this.
Yeah, and just thinking a lot of times you look at maybe like October, September, October, and it's like, oh my gosh, we're missing our goal by so much. But, you know, how much easier would it have been if it's like, hey, we missed our goal by $400 yesterday. We need to make up $400 today. Or, you know, I'm assuming the goal is money, but, you know, it could be any number of metric that you're tracking. But, you know, if you need to make up 400 the next day, or if it starts falling a little bit behind and you want to open up a half Saturday to make up for the month, you know, it's a lot easier to make it up along the way than it is to try to what's the saying about eating an elephant, take it one bite at a time versus, you know, trying to eat the whole elephant at the end when you realize you need to.
Exactly. Yeah, well, I don't know. I've never had elephant before, but you know, that's the probably won't ever do it. But anyway, love elephants, by the way. So there's hundreds of KPIs. There's hundreds. I mean, we can talk about hygiene and what percentage of your production of the 4,000 codes. And we can talk about case acceptance and reappointment and pre-appointment and this appointment, that appointment. So, but I mean, what do we focus on? I mean, we can't focus. You know, you can't have a team meeting that lasts a week and say, okay, now we're on our 738th KPI, guys. Have you got the first 737? So what do we focus on? What do you like to focus on?
Yeah, that's such a good question. And it's funny because, you know, I talked about the one extreme of like not setting the goal and following up on the goal. But there's also the other extreme of like, I want to fix all 8,000 metrics today. And, you know, overwhelming the team and spinning your wheels. So I'm glad you mentioned that too. But really, you know, some of the most important ones, if you can pick, you know, 5 to 10 and start there and really make sure you're nailing those. I mean, production is obviously one, collections is one, profit and overhead, that's two, but they go hand in hand together. Cancellations and no-shows, you know, what are your new patients? You know, the critical ones that are going to be directly indicated to the success of your practice.
All right, well, we're going to hit all those. That's what we're here for. We're not just going to list them. We're going to give everybody some really good things to take home. And the other, by the way, the other thing I see is doctors will go to a, I'll get a call from an office manager. Hey, Art, he went to a management seminar this weekend. Uh-oh, what did he do? He came in the office with 25 things that we're going to do by Friday. Yeah, well, good luck with that. So let's start with some production stuff, Matt. Let's start with missed production days for the doctor and the hygienist. Let's talk about that. What is a missed production day or missed production hours? How does that work?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's directly related. The doctor works that day or they don't work that day. If you miss the day that you have budgeted or planned and you have to reschedule those patients, that's, you know, that's all just lost production right there. So how do you make that up? Are you going to bump up your schedule the other days? Are you going to pick up a Saturday or a Friday to see those patients to keep it going? But, you know, missing days is directly related to missing the production goal.
Now, things happen in life. People get sick. People have family issues. You know, there's an important golf tournament on TV that I just can't miss that day. I mean, things like that, right? Mm-hmm. So we want to try and make up. If we lose a production day, we want to sit down with the doctor and the team and say, okay, we lost this 5,000, 7,000 of production. How are we going to make it up? Okay. Right. How do you give us some tips on scheduling full and productive days? I mean, that's a big deal. I know that a lot of offices, Matt, they tell me, well, we're busy, but we're not productive. Yeah. So how about productive days? I mean, if you're doing, you know, 20 hygiene checks in a day, you're busy. I'm being facetious. That'd be hard to do. But maybe you're not productive.
Yeah, that's a really good question. And it really comes down to training. Your office manager should be really involved with training on what that schedule looks like. There's so many different schedule techniques out there, and whatever works best for a doctor, you know, that's the best schedule.
Throw one or two that you like out, because I want to give some, I want some meat on the bone.
So there's, you know, block scheduling where you try to do similar procedures all at the same time. So that keeps, you know, everything moving efficient. Like you're trying to do all crowns at the same time. My favorite personally is a tiered schedule. So, you know, might be a two or three column schedule. And the first column is your production. So you're doing your crowns or whatever big treatment cases. Then in your second one, you have strategically staggered. You're seeing maybe a couple new patients. And then your recalls are kind of off to the side in a third column. And that's you and the hygienist tag teaming those. So I like the tiered one, because if somebody falls off and somebody, you know, you have an emergency or one of your recall patients wants to start treatment that day, you can kind of slide them over into a production spot if you have a cancellation.
I remember when I was affiliated with Jim Pride and Phil Whitener, who were two of my mentors in dentistry back in the 1980s when I started, that they would always say, try and schedule 65% of your production in the morning when everybody's fresh and ready to go. Do you believe that?
I do. Yeah. People are less likely to cancel in the morning.
Yeah. So, well, Matt, what metrics do you look at when we're looking at, let's talk about cancellations and no-shows, and let's, I mean, I differentiate a cancellation and a no-show. A cancellation is someone who calls at least 24 hours in advance and says, hey, I got to cancel. Something came up. And a no-show is not necessarily just a no-show, but it's somebody who calls 15 minutes before your appointment and says, oh, I forgot the dog has to go in for a vet visit. I can't make it today. And that is a no-show because, you know, so what do we look at cancellations?
And no-shows? Yeah, you know, on average, it's about 20% of your appointments will cancel. Obviously, you want to try to minimize those because it's not a one for one. Also, you know, it's not 20% of your patients might cancel, but a lot of times it might be the production. So it's more than 20% of your day, you know, that cancels. But you're right. Anything less than 24 hours should be cued as a no-show. And I think really where I've had the best success is people that don't confirm appointments, calling and leaving those, you know, the last reminder. Hey, doctor can, you know, set aside 2 hours of their time for you today. It's really important that you're in that day. If you can't make it, please call us and let us know right away. And I think when you're letting them know that doctor set aside that time for them, that's where I had my most success with people calling back and either confirming or rescheduling that appointment. But really, you know, you got to be strategic again with your confirmation call process. You should have there should be a system for everything. Confirmation calls, no different. So do you ask your patients, how do they like their appointment confirmed? Do they want text? Do they want email? Do they want to call? Because not every person is the same. Ideally, text and email are going to be the most efficient, but some people still like a phone call. So know who those people are and have it listed on the schedule. You know, if you sent the text and the email a couple weeks in advance and they're not confirming, what do you do? Do you pick up the phone then at that point and do you call them, or do you just kind of hope, you know, hope's not a strategy.
No. Well, a couple of things that I've seen in the past is, number one, if you have we'll call it a serial no-shower. I don't know if that's a word, but a serial no-shower, we don't let them schedule an appointment. What we do with them is we say, you know, Joe, this is the third time. We love you. Doctor loves you as a patient, but we just can't. We can't have, these are very personal appointments we make for each patient. So what we're going to do is we're going to call you if we have a cancellation, and we're going to say, you know, if you can be here in 30 minutes, we can see you. That's one thing that we like to do. And the other thing that I've seen, Matt, I don't know how you feel about this, is if you have someone who's a good patient and they just no-show, the doctor calls them that evening personally and says, hey, Matt, you know, we had you down for 10 o'clock today and we'd confirmed everything. And I'm just really concerned. Are you okay? Because you don't, you know, that's the first time this happened with you. What do you think about those kind of things?
Yeah, like, you know, first the call list, serial no-showers. That's a good call list idea. The other thing is you can dismiss them too. I mean, if they're continuously disrupting your day, you could work with your risk management team and dismiss them if you needed to.
Yeah.
And doctor call, I think sometimes they underestimate how valuable their call is. Because when the doctor calls compared to me when I was calling as an office manager, made a world of difference. So, and it goes back to like I was saying before too, even when you're confirming the appointment, hey, doctor set aside 2 hours of their time. It's really important that you're here. You know, using that appeal to the doctor's day, it is important.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Again, I got so much to talk to you about. Case acceptance is huge. I mean, I'll tell you what, one of my, you know, you're a really skilled consultant. One of my dearest friends in dentistry is a lady on the East Coast by the name of Deborah Engelhart Nash. And I attended one of Deborah. Do you know Deborah?
No.
Deborah's wonderful. She's one of the most engaging and funniest humans that you will ever meet. And she is also one of the most skilled coaches and consultants on the planet. And 3 years ago, I was speaking with her at the Academy of General Dentistry National Meeting in Orlando. And I happened to have some time and I sat in her hour and a half case acceptance course. And I had like 7 pages of notes, and I've been in the business for 40 years. So case acceptance, what are your KPIs? Do you have some statistics on what percentage? Because we have percentage of acceptance based on number of cases presented, and we have percentage of acceptance based on dollar amount. So what do you like to see?
I like both of them. Honestly,
but you have a percentage that you like to use?
Yeah, so case acceptance should be around 90%. But it just pulled
should
this.
Be.
Yeah. So I pulled this stat from Jarvis Analytics. So national average case acceptance is around 34%.
Yeah.
So if the average practice diagnoses, the average $1 million practice diagnoses $2.4 million in production. So that means $1.4 million is walking out the door annually. It's like, why?
Yeah, why? Why do you see patients not? What is the doctor and the team doing that's wrong where a patient comes in, theoretically, they have trust with the doctor and they have trust with the team. They've been coming there. And then the doctor says, boy, Mrs. Smith, let me show you up on the screen here. That tooth is cracked. I'm just not going to be able to save it. We're going to need to do a crown, or you're going to need a root canal, or you're going to need this, or you need that. And then, you know, why do patients not accept? What is it? You know, we know that some of it is money. Obviously, it's always money. But what is it that the team and the doctor are doing, Matt, that lose it, that is that 66% of patients who are not accepting?
Yeah, there's so much to this one. And this one really comes down to...
Start talking, this is really important.
Yeah, this one really comes down to people skills, soft skills, you know, not trying to fit everyone into the same box, like really trying to understand people and learn people. This takes a lot of team training. I have a couple of resources I made on this, like how to overcome common objections, uh-huh. and communication with the practice. So I think one of the first things is change your mindset as a practice. You're not selling dentistry. You're providing healthcare. Right. And so when you start thinking about money, sometimes it starts to feel like you're selling something you're not, though. Like, you got to get your whole team in that mindset that you're providing healthcare. And people spend money where they think there's value. There's no shortage of pictures online of people lined up outside of Apple stores waiting for that next iPhone. There's Starbucks orders. There's people lined up outside the coffee shop. Like, you see that people will spend money where they put value. So it really comes back to educating the patient, putting the value there, putting everybody on the same page. I'll tell you, one of my biggest pet peeves was communication. So when you start using verbiage that's different, you can really confuse the patient. And an example of that is, you know, doctors sitting in saying, hey, you need scaling and root planing. Then, you know, the treatment coordinator comes in and says, hey, so doctor talked to you about a deep cleaning. And then the hygienist comes in and says, hey, so doctor talked to you about SRPs. And the patient's like, what is going on? You know,
and are these different things? So we need to have so what you're saying, Matt, is that if we're, and that's a perfect example, okay? You know, well, why do I need this procedure? Well, you have a bunch of 5, 6, and 7s. Okay, well, I thought I was maybe a 9 or a 10. No, just kidding. But anyway, but you know, we have a bunch of 5, 6, and 7s. Well, what does that mean? And but you're right. The team has to be using the same verbiage. And you know, Mrs. Smith, we just did a probing of your mouth and your gums, and we're very concerned because and you can get a little technical. You don't have to get very deep. You know, anything, the difference between, you know, from the top of the gum line down to the bone, right? Is, you know, how many millimeters is, you know, if that's more than 4 or 5, 4 millimeters, we are concerned. And this is what we're suggesting. And this is why.
Yeah. You know? There's so many times I see over treatment planning. So yes, you want to identify everything. You want to educate the patient. You don't want them feeling like they need to do everything at once. You know, you really want to focus on WTF, worst tooth first. So focus on WTF. Like, we're going to fix that one first, right? And this doctor I worked with, so I'm excited. I'm like all over the place right now. The best doctor I worked with, I swear, just made it so simple. He would pull up the chair next to the patient. He would show him the x-ray. He just have the arm right here by the patient. He would have the x-ray highlighted, go to the grayscale, and he would highlight, see, this is your nerve. This is the decay. When these two lines touch, you're going to be in a lot of pain, and I don't want you to get there. So let's go ahead and get this crown taken care of so we don't have to get to this root canal. You know, and the patients are like, yeah, let's do it now. I don't want to be in pain.
Right. That's a hot button.
It is.
That's a hot button. It's like, you know, because the patients in their mind, if it doesn't hurt, I don't need the dentistry.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
So a lot of it is really, and doctors, I'm going to tell you, and I've said this, that we're coming up on, Matt, 7 years on doing this podcast at the end of this year. It's crazy. Time flies when you're having fun. When you go to a dental convention, if you go to, and by the way, I will be at the Chicago Midwinter presenting in February. And if any of you are podcast listeners, come to my lectures on financial planning and metrics, and let me know you're a podcast listener. I'd love to see you and meet you. But I'm just saying, when you go to these meetings, don't go to a seminar on occlusion. You know how occlusion works. Don't go to a seminar on how to cut a crown. You know how to do that. Go to a seminar on how to talk to your patients and what to say. Because the doctors that master this, that show that they care about total health, everything we do in your office, doctor, has to do with your total health. And I tell the story in my lectures about how a dentist diagnosed my sleep apnea 20 years ago and probably saved my life. You know, there you go. So, you know, case acceptance is just so, so important. I like the fact about the verbiage. And the other thing that's really important, I just interviewed my good friend, Kevin Henry, who is, Dental Assisting Nation, Dental Assistant Nation. And he talks about how nobody sees the importance of the dental assistant. But after the doctor makes their diagnosis, Matt, and the doctor walks out of the office, the only person left in the treatment room is the assistant. And the patient looks at the assistant and says, oh my goodness, do I really need this? And in a split second, if that assistant with their body language and their words don't say something like, Mrs. Smith, let me tell you something. I would go to the moon for Dr. Nelson. If Dr. Nelson says that you need this, he is the most ethical professional practitioner I've ever worked with, and I've been in dentistry 20 years. If he says you need this, I promise you, we don't do this just to increase our bottom line. We do this because we want your health to be good. And that's the type of verbal skills. Now, I know maybe I'll get a bunch of emails. Hey, Art, can you come to work in my office as a dental assistant? No, you don't want me in your office as a dental assistant. But that's really, really important. All right, let's jump to some other. Go ahead.
I know that's true because before I got into dentistry, I was that patient and I looked at the dental assistant and I was like, do I really need that done? I was that person. So I know it happens. The other thing the offices that are best with these patient situations are the ones that role play. So you have a discussion at the end of the day, or you have a discussion at the beginning of the next day. Why didn't this patient schedule their treatment? Why didn't this patient? And you talk about it. So was it time, money, pain, anxiety, or fear, or was it a perceived of lack of trust? So why didn't they schedule? And then set some of these aside and role play them in your next team meeting. Role play them in your, what could have gone better? What could I have said here? What did you say here? Do it while it's fresh. Like, so the more you talk about it in practice, the more comfortable your team's going to feel. And I know everybody hates role playing. As soon as you mention it, your whole team's going to be like, oh, but it does make you better.
Yeah. I know the national average is 34. I've heard numbers like that. I mean, we're looking for, 6. I have a 60 and an 80% number. You know, is 60% of dollars and 80% of procedures. I mean, at the end of the day, your software, your Dentrix, your Eagle Soft, your Open Dental are going to be able to diagnose all of this for you and show you these numbers because that's what they have and that's what they do. And it's just so important. Let's talk about pre-appointing patients. So, like a patient who leaves after a hygiene appointment and what's your pre-appointment percentage? What do you like there?
Yeah, it should be at least 90%.
Yep, absolutely. So talk about, again, this is so important because the person at the front desk, they've got to work with the insurance. They've got to bill insurance. They've got to confirm appointments. They've got to enter stuff into the... They get all this stuff and there's no time because you got, maybe there's two or three patients, if it's a big practice, checking out at the desk. Yep. And if you don't have enough people, so talk about pre-appointing. How do we have a system to do that?
Yeah. I mean, either you're scheduling them the same day, time. So if they're in on a Wednesday at 2, if you're going to be ahead on the pre-booking, try to do the same thing Wednesday at 2. It really helps if the hygienist helps with booking that future recall appointment, because then they're committing to the hygienist. And that's, we know from patient behavior, that's more of a commitment on their end when they're booking it with the hygienist or with the dental assistant. So whoever's the last person with them in the room, if there's time, I know different offices have different procedures, but that is usually one of the most successful ways to do it. If you're not pre-booking these appointments, if the patient's leaving and saying they're going to call you, it's very likely they're going to disappear into the abyss.
What I like to do, Matt, is if that happens, or even before that happens, it's like, okay, so Mrs. Smith, so yeah, I certainly understand you need to go home and talk to your husband. May I have your permission, if today is Monday, to check back if I don't, because I know you get busy and, you got all this stuff going on. And if you know what their stuff is, like, oh my God, I mean, doctor, or you told me that you're planning a wedding for your daughter. Okay, whatever it is. So I know you get busy. May I have your permission to check back with you on Friday if I don't hear from you? And I love, and I use this not only in business, but I use it with my friends and my family. It's like, may I have permission to ask you the following, to talk about this concept? And my family gets a little tired of it because stop asking me permission, just ask me what you want to know. But the point is, when you're dealing in a business setting, I like asking for permission. It's not like, okay, either you're just going to get a call on Friday, which you're going to ignore, or may I have permission to check in with you Friday? Maybe what's the best time to call you if I don't hear from you? And then that gives them a thing in their mind that's like, okay, well, if I don't call them back, give them an answer, and you just want an answer. And again, overcoming objectives is so important, but that's one thing. I want to jump to collecting.
Before we jump, I really like the way you worded that. Another one I like is, completely understand you don't know what you're going to be doing 6 months from now. Do you mind if I put a hold on this same date and time, you know, six months from now, so I don't forget to call you? And the appointment's made.
And that's a great way for, you know, you've got patients in your practice, doctors. You've got airline pilots. You've got policemen. You've got firefighters who, you know, for example, one of my best friends in the world is, he retired from a major airline as a pilot. And he would be on 14 days in a month and off 14 days. But he didn't know his schedule until 30 days before. So what we would do with those patients is you put, like you say, a placeholder, say, hey Joe, I know that you're going to get your schedule. Let's put a placeholder here and I'll check back with you 30 days, if the placeholder is October 25th, I'll check back with you around September 25th and let's see if you know your schedule. And then that's a good system. And it's the same with the, you know, firefighters and other people who are working, you know, 12 hours on, you know, ER doctors, people like that, you know. So, all right, let's talk about collections. We always like 97 and 98%. That's what I've taught. I'm sure you've taught for years. Mm-hmm. All right, let's start with, you know, where do you see the process of collecting money broken? Is it with the insurance plans? Is it with the patients? Where's that broken?
Yeah, it tends to be one or the other. In some unfortunate cases, it's both. But, you know, I think that's the first step. If you're not hitting the goal you want for collections, it's, you know, step one is trying to figure out, is it the patient collecting from the patient or is it collecting from the plan? That's step one. And then once you do figure out which one it is, then you start peeling back the layers of the onion again and start digging into like, okay, if it's patients, are my systems broken? Did I let them know what time it was or what their copay was before they came in that day? Did I collect it, check in? You know, am I using third-party systems or third-party payers to collect, you know, something like CareCredit or something for bigger cases?
Right.
You know, am I doing in-office payment arrangements, which I don't really recommend anymore with the new credit law that went into place last year, about not being able to report to the credit bureaus.
Right.
So I don't recommend doing in-office payment arrangements anymore. I think it just puts too much risk on you.
Yep.
So, you know, trying to dig in again, find out where is that issue with the patient collection. If it's the insurance or the dental plan, then it's like, okay, how's my billing process? Am I sending out a claim every day or am I waiting till the end of the week and sending out a bunch of claims at once? Am I getting a bunch of requests?
What do you like? What do you like to do daily, every day?
Every day.
And then maybe setting some time aside. And you set some time aside where the front office administrator, you know, if you only have one, that makes it hard. But if you have two or three, one of them goes into a room, closes a door, and spends an hour calling, you know, delinquent payment patients and following up with insurance. And if you do electronic insurance billing, that's pretty reliable, isn't it?
Yeah, it is really good. The thing I like about them is I do work a lot with embezzlement in dentistry as well, and that's a really hot topic. And one of the things I like about, you know, these the services like ESS and a bunch of the other ones out there is that they have two people. So they have a biller and a poster. So there's a system of checks and balances there. It's not one person doing all your stuff. So the likelihood of theft is lower. You know, not having your team super involved in it is also really helpful. It frees them up. So instead of being bogged down with billing and posting and stuff, now they're up front talking to your patients, putting together treatment plans, calling those recall patients that you might have forgot to book, you know, doing some marketing. So I think, you know, I'm a big fan of the e-billing.
Oh yeah. So here's another thing, doctors, as far as if your collections are not in that 97 or 98%, you need to be and now, you know, you mentioned the E word, embezzlement, and we've done, In fact, the first podcast I ever did was my dear, dear friend, the president of our Academy of Dental CPA group, Alan Schiff, and he's a certified fraud examiner, and we talked about all of that. And so, doctors, you need to create an atmosphere in your office that you are watching. Not that you are threatening your employees, okay, every second I'm going to be over your shoulder and micromanage you and make sure you're not stealing from me, but you are looking. Doctors, you must get, at the end of every day, a day sheet on your desk. You must, doctors, get a reconciliation of the day sheet to the computer to the deposit, to the deposit slip, to make sure that went in the bank. I mean, again, we could do 2, 3, 4 hours on embezzlement. So what are some of the embezzlement things you hear, and maybe a couple of tips on how to, again, we don't have an hour to talk about this, but.
Yeah, no, the main thing is, again, systems. So establish your system of auditing, like you said, check your daily system, check your day sheet, compare it to your deposit slip. That's always a big one. Work your deleted items report. If you don't know where it is, work with your practice management software. They will show you. So things that are deleted. Sometimes it might be a payment that's posted to print a receipt and then it's deleted. So check that. Double check your EFTs. I've seen one office where some of the EFTs were set up to go to the office bank account and some of the EFTs were set to go to the office manager's bank account. So, just have eyes on things, have a system to audit, just make sure you're double checking things. You don't have to do everything yourself. You don't have to be scared. But the more involved you are, the more auditing you're doing, the more questions you ask, the more secure you'll be.
You guys have some resources to help people set up systems at CDA on embezzlement or?
Yeah. I get a lot of phone calls to talk about systems in place. I do have a resource available on how to do a team chart audit. So it's just how to spot check charts, how to spot check, your daily numbers and stuff. So yeah, just something to build that system.
I mean, that is the main way people lose collections. And basically one out of the statistics are either, depends on who you read, either one out of every three or one out of every four healthcare practitioners will be embezzled. I've heard one and two sometimes, but it is, I mean, if you inspect what you expect and you create an atmosphere of being a good leader and saying, I am going to be watching. And for employees, if you have an employee who never takes a vacation, if you have an employee that when the doctor asks, I need to look at, well, why do you need to look at that? If you have an employee where one of the other employees is going to get into some, oh, well, no, that's my job. I've got that thing. Why are you looking at that? Then you have an environment where you could be embezzled. All right, let's jump over to overhead and the time we have left. What are you seeing as a national average? I'll tell you what I'm seeing. You tell me what you're seeing. I'll bet you it'll be the same numbers.
Yeah, about 66% overhead or 34% profit.
33 to 38% profit is what we look for. Yeah. What I see, Matt, is in the larger metropolitan areas, the profit seems to be lower because it's more expensive to live there. It's more expensive to hire people and stuff like that. Because in the, I'm not going to say rural, because rural people take meaning. I mean, I live in Southern California. We have 15 million people here in Southern California. But you have a city of 100,000 people. That's not rural, but it's not a big city. But in the smaller cities, smaller towns, and in the rural areas, it is less expensive to hire people. The cost of living is less expensive, although that's changing these days. And we can still charge the same fees. So let's start with the biggest expense in the practice, salaries. What do you see as far as salaries?
30 to 33% of collections is
now that includes the front office, the back office, treatment coordinator, and the hygienist, right?
Right. Yeah. And the dental assistants. And so I'll tell you, I hear a lot, we got to crack down on overtime. Like that's like the number one thing I usually hear. You need to crack down on overtime. Uh-huh. But I think again, don't just accept the first right answer. So let's dig into that overtime. Where did that overtime come from? So did, you know, your assistant that was making $30 an hour stay an hour of overtime, so $45, because you were finishing, you know, a $1,000 crown and taking care of that patient. So, you know, not all overtime is bad overtime. I think where usually I find like the biggest miss when I look is it's headcount. And there's some kind of system that's broken or something that's not working right or some kind of inefficiency. And then the answer is to hire someone else to do that inefficient part rather than working and training the team you have to make them more efficient. And so I see more of an issue there with the headcount than I do with, like, say an overtime.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, a lot of times we don't like to say this because there are clients and they're who we talk to, but it's the doctor. So I had one office manager who said to me, Art, I'm going to be real blunt with you. This is funny. The office manager called the doctor a chataholic, meaning he loved coming to the office and he loved socializing with the patients. And every day he put the office 30 to 45 or 60 minutes behind. And that, number one, that pisses off patients. Number two, that pisses off your staff. And number three, that causes overtime, which is time and a half, plus payroll taxes, plus benefits, plus workers' comp, plus all this stuff they don't realize. So it's really important that the doctor and the team understand that, yeah, we need to be friendly to the patients. We need to be caring to the patients. We need to find out about their daughter's or son's wedding, but not for a half hour, okay? And you can do that, and that's about verbal, we're back to verbal skills and case presentation. Let's talk about clinical supplies for a minute. What do you, I mean, those have gone up.
Yeah, they have gone up, and I'll tell you, I know there was a lot of fear about them going up with the tariffs, and I've talked to a lot of partners, out that are suppliers, and a lot of the product that they get doesn't come from some of the countries that are getting big hits. So Talking to some of the suppliers, they're not anticipating the big increase. And I know that that's been on a lot of people's minds. So that's, well, first and foremost, that's a good thing. We do see on average about 6 to 7% of collections. You know, there's things you can do. I always recommend having one person in charge of supplies, have them organize the cabinet, have them do the orders, make sure you're shopping between 2 to 3 suppliers, make sure you're limiting how many orders you're getting a month to save on those shipping costs. You know, have kind of like an order to level so that you know, like, hey, we absolutely cannot run below this level of this supply, and know what those are. So you don't run out and you're not doing like emergency orders all the time and incurring all those extra shipping costs.
Well, and the other thing is I see a lot of people, here's another thing about supplies as an accountant. Okay, you buy an articulator. You buy a new, an intro camera for $3,000 or $4,000, and it all comes on one bill and it gets dumped in the supplies. Oh my God, my supply bill is 10%. Well, number one, you've got things that don't belong in there. That's one important thing. The other thing I see is a lot of doctors who are doing clear aligners, and we know the names of those companies, they put them in supplies where I really think those need to go into lab. My opinion. But supplies, it's just a matter of making sure that, you know, you have a system and I'm looking for the best prices. There are procurement companies out there who can help you with that, you know? So if you need to talk about that, give me a call. I got some. 657-279-3243. See, I'm 66 years old and I can still memorize numbers. That's good. All right, lab, 7 to 8%.
Yep, that's what I'm seeing too.
Yeah, and you know, lab costs. Again, doctors, you know, we can do a whole podcast on whether you should be bringing CAD/CAM technology into your practice. If you are a doctor who likes to control the process, if you believe in the restoration. And the biggest thing I get about CAD/CAM, the technology has come a long way from, CIRIC 1, if you will. I know there's other CAD/CAM technology, but CIRIC is the name that most people associate with it. So from CIRIC 1 back in the 80s to where they are today, where you can mill a crown in 6 minutes or less, and I've seen the technology is pretty amazing. But, you know, it's a, I think it's a great marketing tool. And if you can do crowns for the most part, you know, that are good quality, you believe in the restoration, you get your team to buy into it. I mean, what do you think? What do you think about in-office processing?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of parts to it. I mean, one, you know, if you are getting a lot of cancellations and a lot of it might be because of time, maybe. I mean, you eliminate that time factor if someone can get
that extra appointment. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to knock out that whole extra appointment for someone? I mean, the office I managed was right by the state capitol. We had a lot of state employees that were on probationary periods. It was hard for them to miss 2 days, you know, come in and do it, you know. So to miss 1 day or to miss a couple hours 1 day versus two was really beneficial to them. And that was, you know, knowing our demographic. Two, you know, it really helps with, again, with if you do have a cancellation and then you have a recall patient that's ready to maybe start treatment that day and shifting them over into that spot. So it gives you that flexibility throughout the day to stay on top of your goals as well, too. So I'm a fan.
Oh, yeah. Rent. Okay. So I'm going to tell you, I'm a dental practice broker. Mm-hmm. One of the, we can control most of the process of the sale of a dental practice. We cannot control landlords. I'm just going to go say this. And for any of you doctors that are listening to me, you are exempted from this comment. Because if you own your own building and maybe you have other dentists or other people in their building or you own real estate, you are exempted because all of my dentist listeners to this podcast are really good, nice human beings. But other than you who are listening, landlords are evil human beings, period. I have no trepidation about saying that. None whatsoever. So, you know, that's one of the reasons doctors, and now, you know, if you're practicing in Santa Monica, California, or Manhattan, it's going to be really hard for you to be able to afford your dental office. But if you're practicing in a town of 100,000 people, and you can build a building and be your own landlord, I'm all for it. That is a big financial planning thing. But what are you seeing for rents?
Yeah, well, nationally 4 to 5%. I know, you know, we talked about in more metropolitan areas, it's higher. It's like a 6 to 9%.
Oh,
and yeah. I think, like you said, there's not a lot of control you have there with the rent. So it's really, what else within that lease can you use to maximize you? So, like, are you reviewing the lease annually? Do you get tenant improvement credits towards your lease, and are you using them?
Right.
Is there a common area maintenance? I remember when I was an office manager, I got so mad because we were always paying a common area maintenance fee, and it included a security guard. Well, the security guard was always way up here by the grocery store because they were up late, and my office got broken into a handful of times. So I really had to put a lot of pressure on them. Like, why am I continuing to pay this rent when your officer's not here watching our building and we got broken into all these times?
Right.
So stay on top of your common area maintenance fees. Are you getting what you're paying for there? Are they actually giving you what they're committing to you? Look at your signage. Is your name on the sign? Can you get it? Is it prominent? You know, there's things within the lease that you can make sure that you're getting the most out of your money there, even if you can't control the exact cost.
Right. And again, if you have any opportunity to own your suite or build a building, again, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've sat down with a doctor for 2 to 4 hours. And like I say, Matt, my life is a math problem. That's what I've been saying for 42 years as a dental, you know, I'm sorry, 41 years as a dental CPA. My life is a math problem. We look at the numbers. Right now you're paying this rent. Okay. Is it going to go up? Yes. Are you going to get tax benefits? Yes. You know, when we were at Pride, we used to, and there's no guarantees of this. Don't say Art Wiederman guarantees this, but we would always tell doctors at our, when I was doing the design seminars, I would attend those with Dr. Jim Pride and Harry Demery and Charlie Warren and those of you listening who are gray hairs or nodding your head, yeah, I knew those guys, right? We would always say that a new office brings excitement and fresh, you know, a fresh look. And we would say 10 to 20% increase in new patients in the first year, just from the newness of the office and stuff. All right, let's talk about the rest of the overhead, Matthew. Utilities, fees, dues, marketing. I mean, I want to talk about marketing for a minute. That's one of my hot. I should have gone into marketing. I love marketing so much. what are you seeing as the rest of the overhead?
Yeah, you want to keep that around 10%.
Yeah.
And that's going to, you know, that's going to include a lot of things. But like, you know, big things for me, like I remember we would have the AC on, you know, we're in the valley, it gets hot here. So people would leave the AC on and I would walk in the morning and it'd be like 60 degrees in the morning because we left the AC run the whole night. Yep. So, I mean, these are just little things, but things like that, having
lights
or lights, they do. Yeah. All the monitors. I remember when I first took over as an office manager, the monitors were on all the time. Then they all started dying because they had been left on. So one, you're leaving them on, that's electricity. Two, you're replacing monitors that are burning out faster than they should. So, you know, are those off? Are you turning off the lights when you leave? You know, I said the AC, but the heater too.
Well, let's talk about marketing for a second. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a hot button with me. Number one, doctors, the cheapest marketing, which costs you absolutely nothing, is asking your patients for referrals. And I have said this, if you're a regular listener, you can go take a potty break if you want, because you've heard this many times before. Okay, Mrs. Smith has no idea that you need new patients in your practice. All she knows is she's got to go pick up the dry cleaning and she's got to go do the food shopping and she's got to pick up the kids at 3:30 from school. But if she doesn't know that the life's blood of your practice are new patients, she's not going to refer her friends. And if she had a good experience, okay, I'm going to do this because I love doing this, Matthew. All right. This is it. So the best way to ask for a referral, doctors, is for the doctor, when the patient leaves, to just say, how did it go today? Just say, how did it go today? And if you get an answer 2 out of 3 times, I will never come back to your office. You have the worst team, and this is filthy, and I hate this place, and I'm going to write a minus 10 review, then you know you have a problem. But most times, doctors, you're going to get, oh my gosh, I really thought that I was going to hate coming to the dentist. I love coming here. I love your team. You're soft to the touch. I love it. And then your answer is, well, Mr. Nelson, I want to tell you, when we saw you on the schedule today at 10 a.m. in our morning huddle, which is a whole nother thing. If you're not having a morning huddle, shame on you. Okay. But in your morning huddle, we saw that you're coming in at 10 a.m. and we all smiled. We love you being a part of our family. And by the way, I don't know if you know this, Mr. Nelson, but we do accept new patients in our practice. But here's the rule. They have to be nice like you. If they're not nice like you, we don't want them. and they need to understand that we are so focused on taking care of your total health, and teeth are a part of it. And if they understand how you understand it, oh my God, they're going to go home and I'll bet you 5 out of 10 times they're going to say, I had no idea, Dr. Wiederman, that you accepted new patients in your practice. Oh my God, I've got at least 3 friends I can tell. Bam, bam, bam. I sound like the Flintstones, you know, bam, bam, right? So there you go. So, right? I mean, that's what you get.
Completely agree. Yep, yeah. Completely agree. And it's so free. It doesn't cost you anything.
No. And then here's the other thing you need to do. And my friend, and I'll mention her name because she is just golden. My friend, Christy Boltz. Christy is, she doesn't have a dental marketing company. Christy is what's called a CMO, a chief marketing officer. And in any business, you've got that. If you're marketing, Amazon has a whole team and a chief marketing officer to figure out what works in your marketing. Okay. And what Christy does, and if you are looking for someone to evaluate your marketing program, again, get a hold of me. I've given out my number. I'll get you in touch with Christy. She's going to look at it. She did this for one client. She said, doctor, you are spending $80,000 a year with this marketing company, and you have gotten 0 new patients. So you've got to look at your marketing. You've got to look at what you're doing. You've got to have a great website. You've got to do social media. Social media is important. And for us gray hairs, okay, I am on Instagram, Arthur Wiederman, if you want to, you know, follow me. And but you know, us old guys, we don't do social media. We don't want to deal with it. We would always be the personal. But that's how people find things today. So anyway, any comments about marketing, Matt?
No, I think you nailed it on the head. I mean, I think you got to analyze it. I will say I'm not a huge fan of ads, like Google ads, Facebook ads. I don't think that those are super productive. I think having a great website and having a really good SEO, search engine optimization, where people search and you're one of the first ones that come up. So having good people that can do that for you. But again, like you said, internal marketing it's free and it's easy.
Okay. So as we get to the end of the podcast today, and by the way, I love doing this. I could sit here on the phone with you and geek out over numbers and things. I mean, at the end of the day, doctor, it's about working on your business, not just in your business. And you need to take time, whether it's once a month or once a quarter, you have a meeting with your team. You come up with a plan and you don't cover 100 things. Today, we're going to focus on case presentation. Next month, we're going to focus on collections. Next month, we're going to focus on, do we want to add CAD/CAM technology or do we want to add a CBCT? I mean, so you have a plan each month of what you're going to talk about, and you don't come back from a seminar with 20 different things. Matt, if there were three pieces of advice that you could give our listeners on how to increase their bottom line, what would they be?
Number one would be to set the goals. Set the goals, break them down into bite-sized chunks and track them daily, track them weekly, communicate with the team. But, you know, set the goals and track them. Number two would just be evaluate your systems. I think really very commonly we accept the first right answer. So why is this wrong? Oh, this is why it's wrong. And then we just move on. I think you really got to peel back the layers of the onion and really look at all the multiple different factors that could play into why something didn't go as planned. So evaluate your systems and really dig in is number two. And then three, don't be afraid to try to change things up a little bit. Try different systems. Do the research online. What's different? Call one of us, talk to us about what we're hearing people are trying to do. But, you know, try different systems to try to find out what works for you and your team.
So doctors, what I want you to know is, again, Matt is in California, so he supports the 27,000 members of the California Dental Association. If you are a member of CDA, I mean, CDA's number is available online. Most of you are members. You can give and ask for Matt. If you are not in the state of California, call your state dental society, whatever state you're in. I don't know, Matt, do you know how many of the states have counterparts like yourself? Do they all have them or do they have resources? Or
I don't think most states have this, but I am happy to have a discussion and help where I can.
All right. Well, maybe do just give out what give out your phone number. Just, I mean, they can find you online anyway if they like you.
Yeah, it's 916-554-4940, or you can email me at matthew.nelson@cda.org.
Hey, Matt, you're a great friend. I really appreciate the time today. I hope we gave our listeners some really good tips. I mean, at the end of the day, doctor, it's about having a plan and having goals and not just showing up every day and hoping there's enough money in the checkbook to pay your bills. And unfortunately, in 41 years of doing this work, I have seen this more than I care to see it. And it's about a mindset. And nothing is easy in this life. Running a business, I did it for 33 years as a dental CPA. I had 10 employees. I've been in your shoes. I understand what employee problems are. Setting a tone in your office that we're running this as a business, but that patient's health is number one, okay? Number two is you inspect what you expect and creating trust not only in your patients, but in your employees, and knowing your employees, knowing that they will be listened to, they will be respected, and that it's going to be a nice, happy, fun place to work, but we have a job to do. And if you create that, and it's all about culture, and there's so many books, doctors, about culture. Culture is so important. I have doctors who have set a culture in their office that people hate working there, and they're always looking for another job because the doctor is always yelling, and the doctor is always mad, and the doctor brings his or her personal life into the office, and you can't do that. Life is life, and things happen, and we deal with it, okay? But it's about creating a great culture. Matthew Nelson, practice management analyst. That sounds like a very official title, Matthew. You should change it to cool guy who talks about dentistry. Maybe we do that. Matthew Nelson from the California Dental Association. Hang with me as I take the podcast out, and thank you for being with me today. And folks, again, I want to thank you, as I say every single time we publish this. We're over 225 podcasts. We have thousands of listeners who listen to this. And I know when I started podcasting, there were about 10 dental podcasts, and there's now over 200 dental podcasts. And I have a lot of loyal listeners who contact me on a regular basis. So I am very appreciative of that. Thank you for the honor and the privilege of your time. And I hope there's good information. We got some great stuff coming up in the coming months and next year. I've got some really great stuff coming up. If you are looking for a dental CPA, please give me a call, 657-279-3243 or A. Wiederman, A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N, at idebailey.com. Sign up with, we are doing through the Harbor, Orange County, and San Gabriel Valley Dental Societies, a year-end tax update on November 13th. Again, contact me and we'll get you signed up. It's free. Please go to our wonderful partner, Decisions in Dentistry magazine, www.decisionsindentistry.com. 140 continuing education courses at a wonderful price. That's www.decisionsindentistry.com. And with that, Matt, thanks a lot for hanging with me for an hour or so. And I think we gave some great information to our listeners. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we will call it another podcast. This is Art Wiederman for the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast with Art Wiederman, CPA. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode. The Art of Dental Finance and Management podcast is produced by Ide Bailey in partnership with Art Wiederman, CPA, Decisions in Dentistry magazine, and the Academy of Dental CPAs. For audience questions and feedback, email Art Wiederman, awiederman at idebailey.com. That's A-W-I-E-D-E-R-M-A-N at E-I-D-E-B-A-I-L-L-Y.com. Or you may call Art at 657-279-3243.